saw with awe that he wasn't afraid of death. He dared to fight because his destiny was to die. And where the destroyer of worlds had created fear, the first mortal had bravery to meet it. The immortals had never had a need for it before, but mortals did. So the first beings made another mortal, and another. They fashioned each in a duller image of an immortal thing, men instead of Jean, horses instead of Buraki, birds instead of rocks. They worked until they had an army, and against the might of mortality, the destroyer of worlds finally fell. Her rule over the earth broke, and the creatures she brought with her were left alone, stalking the desert night. The story ended, the air full of the silent spell old Dowd's words had woven. Then the world rushed back in, the one the first mortal had fought and died for, filled with idle camp chatter and the flicker of pipe smoke, and Isra calling Yasmin away to scold her over the luridly bright kalat she'd just found among her other clothes. "I'll take your watch," I offered as Yasmin joined her grandmother with a roll of her eyes and the camp settled around us. I felt alive, filled up by the desert, lit on fire. I don't think I could sleep anyway.
"I'd rather stay up after that."
Jin offered me a drink across the empty space between us.
"He's got me half terrified I'm going to get eaten by a ghoul in my sleep."
"In Dustwalk, they say that only happens to sinners." I took a swig from the flask and passed it back.
"And non-believers," Jin said, "like me."
"You don't believe in God?"
"I've been a lot of places," Jin said, "and I've heard a lot of what people think is true. When everyone seems so very sure, it's hard to figure anyone is right."
I'd never thought about whether I believed in God. I believed in the stories in the holy books, the same way I believed in the stories of the first mortal or rebel Prince Ahmed. It never mattered to me if they were true. They had enough truth of greater ideas, of heroes and sacrifice, and the things everybody wanted to be.
"In Miraji, you claim that God created the immortals, your Jean, from fire, and they made the first mortals. In the Ionian Peninsula, they say the immortals themselves are gods, and they created us humans for their amusement. The Albish say that all things sprang straight from the river and from the trees, created by the heart of the world, immortal and mortal alike. The Galen believe that first beings and ghouls are no different, that they're both tools of the destroyer of worlds, and that some different god than yours created mankind to destroy them and purify the earth."
"Immortals could be killed by iron, same as ghouls. But the notion of murdering a genie made everything in me rebel. The relationship between humans and immortals was complicated. There were 1,000 stories about mortals tricking Jean, finding their true names and using the names to trap them. But immortals were forces of nature, creatures of God, as ancient as the world itself. And our short lives were nothing compared to their endless ones. Killing immortals was what the destroyer of worlds did. Humanity was created to save them."
"Is that what the Galen are using our guns for?"
"Mostly they use them against other humans these days," he said. "They wiped out the first beings in their country long ago. They're working on everywhere else now."
"Like Sicha."
My eyes drifted to the open shirt collar where his tattoo was. I didn't realize until then that there had been a part of me that was still angry at him for blowing up the factory in Dustwalk. Whether or not it hurt the Galen, it crippled the whole of the last county, too. And sure, there were plenty of folks there who didn't deserve any better than starving to death. But there were also folks like Tamid,
who'd never learned to hate that place the way he should have. And my cousin Olia, who every once in a while caught my gaze behind Farah's back and rolled her eyes with me. And my little cousin Nasima, who still hadn't caught on that she was supposed to be ashamed to be born a girl. Those people didn't deserve to starve. Then again, Jin's country didn't deserve to get invaded the way Miraji had been. Jin pulled up his collar. The Galen have been kept at bay for 1,000 years now by their neighbors. When it used to be magic against swords, it was a fair fight. But the Galen are armed with guns now, and magic is bleeding out of everywhere, no matter what you believe in.
So what do you believe?
I asked. I believe money and guns get you a lot further in a war than magic these days.
If that was true, you'd be living rich in some city with a soft bed and 5 wives, not blowing up factories in the dead end of nowhere, Sichian boy.
5 wives?
He snorted into his flask.
I'm not sure I could keep up with that many.
I didn't say anything. I figured out with Jin that if I gave him long enough, usually he'd give me the truth.
I always figured the land creates its first beings the way it creates its mortals. In the green forests and fields of the west, their magic grows from deep soil. In the frozen north, it crawls and claws out of the ice, and here it burns from the sand. The world makes things for each place, fish for the sea, rocks for the mountain skies, and girls with sun in their skin and perfect aim for a desert that doesn't let weakness live.
I never had anyone describe me like that before. His gaze flicked away too fast for me to fall into it.
Of course, my brother would tell you that the first beings are all just manifestations on Earth of one creator God. That's what the new philosophers are saying.
You've got a brother? As soon as I said it, I saw on his face that it was a slip. He hadn't meant to tell me that, but he couldn't take it back. Where is he? Jin stood, brushing sand off his hands.
I think I'll take you up on that offer to cover my watch after all.
Chapter 13. The desert was changeless. For 6 weeks there was only sand and blue skies. The blisters on my feet turned bloody just in time for fresh ones. The restlessness I'd shoved into the bottom of my gut my whole life wasn't staying down so easy. I was on my way to Isman, and I'd never felt more awake in my life. At night, while the rest of the camp slept, I'd shed my shima and breathe, and sit some of Jin's watch with him until I was worn out enough to sleep before mine. He taught me words from other languages he'd learned sailing. After the first month, I could threaten a man and insult his mother in Sichian, Albish, and Galen. He showed me how he'd broken Damad's wrist in the wrestling pit, a move he'd learned from a Jarpurian sailor in an Albish port. I asked him about his broken nose once. He told me a Mirajin girl had hit him, and his brother had set it for him. He did that sometimes, mention his brother, like he was forgetting to guard himself with me. But he talked freely about most everything else. He told me about the places he'd been, the foreign shores he'd sailed to, and stories of all the things he'd done, until I was itching to see the golden palaces of Amanpour and feel the rock of a ship below my feet. The stories of Isman had belonged to my mother, but the world was a lot bigger than my mother ever told me, and it occurred to me once or twice that I could go anywhere in it. I knew we were getting close to the end of the desert the first time I saw something other than sand dunes on the horizon.
It's called Dev's Valley,
Jin told me as the camp settled down.
We were on the outskirts of it.
It's a mess of mountains and canyons all the way down the western Mirajine border. They say it was carved into the land during the war against the Destroyer of Worlds, before mankind.
That's one hell of a battle.
We were probably a 2-day walk away.
2 days wasn't so long.
I looked up into the night. The sand rolled out in an endless ripple, turned blue by the starlight, so it was almost hard to tell where it met the sky, except for the wild burst of stars overhead.
We've been walking for near 2 months now. The stars have moved.
A captain on one of the ships I worked on used to be able to travel by the stars.
But you need a broken compass.
As always, when I mentioned the compass, I got nothing from him except for the slightest twitch of his lip.
You want me to take your watch?
I asked.
It was a pattern we'd fallen into since the first night.
You're unnatural.
Jin ran his hands over his face.
This desert is enough to drain any man.
Well, I'm not a man, I said. And I was just trying to be nice, so...
No, wait.
Jin's fingers laced with mine too quick to react, pulling me down to sit next to him. It sent a stupid, wild jolt through me before he let me go just as fast.
I'm sorry. I'm just sick to death of the sand everywhere.
I'm plenty used to it, I suppose. I stared out across the dunes. They looked like they went on forever, but the horizon felt closer with the mountains. It gets deep into your soul after a while.
It's in your skin, too.
He reached out a hand, and before I could think, his palm was flat against my cheek, warm and a little bit rough. His thumb traced the length of my cheekbone. A cascade of sand went in its wake, falling away from skin where it was stuck, and leaving a strange, burning shiver behind.
Amani.
He didn't take his hand away from my face.
You're going to have to be careful when we get to Dasama. The city has been an encampment for Galen soldiers for years now. It's got almost as many of them as it does Mirajine people in its walls.
When am I not careful?
I tried for lightness, but in truth I was all too aware of his hand on my face. You're never careful,
Jin said wryly, his thumb tracing rough patterns on my cheek, his eyes following it, like he was memorizing it.
Hell, right now, if anyone from the caravan happened to look over, your cover would be blown.
His hand ran along my jawline. I could feel his touch on my face, leaving my breathing ragged. I'd say you're the one not being careful just now.
He seemed to catch himself. His hand dropped away quickly. A cold ache spread out behind it.
Besides, I said, you'll be with me. How much trouble can Atiya possibly get into if she's got Sakaar?
Atiya and Zia was a great love story.
Atiya and Sakaar was just our joke.
He didn't laugh. I'd gotten to know what silence meant from Jin.
He was hiding something from me. Suddenly, how soon we'd be going our separate ways crept up on me. My Aunt Sophia might be blood, but Jin I knew, and I didn't want to leave him. He made the world bigger. I wanted to go to the countries he'd been to, and more than anything I wanted him to ask me to go with him. But we were running out of time together. In the early light of morning, the mountains looked even closer. My stomach twisted in anticipation. The excitement of nearing Dasama, the end of the desert and the first civilization we'd seen in weeks, crept into the caravan as the day wore on. The normal stoic trudging through the sand turned restless. The younger kids dashed up and down the line of camels, already trying to talk anyone who would listen out of a few luzi so that they'd be able to buy themselves treats when we got to Tasama. Men and women were starting to pine loudly for a glass of something cool. Isra was berating Parviz loudly about the provisions, how it had almost not been enough this time, how we were going to have to resupply as soon as we got into town. Yasmin was keeping her young cousins going with a game she called When I Get to the City.
When I get to the city, I'm going to pull off my feet and get new ones that aren't so sore.
Little Fahim drooped dramatically, letting his arms swing like a rag doll's.
When I get there,
his sister chimed in, pulling him up by the scruff of his shirt,
I'm going to eat 100 Yazdi cakes.
100?
Yasmin faked wide-eyed surprise.
How will you have room after eating 100 dates and 100 chickens?
She rattled off the list of foods the girl had already promised to eat. I tried to stop my own stomach from growling in answer.
What about you, Alidad?
Yasmin asked, trying to draw me into their game.
What are you going to do when we get to Dasama?
Truth be told, all I wanted was to wash for so long that the dust from my skin would turn the baths to a miniature version of the sand sea. Only I couldn't do that without throwing away my secret. But more than Dasama, Isman was preying on my mind as we got closer to the end of the desert. My mother had talked about going to find her sister in Isman so often that it was like a prayer in our household when my father wasn't there. But I didn't even know if I wanted it anymore. I didn't know if I'd ever wanted it, or if my mother had just been wanting it enough for the two of us to keep us going all those years. Hell, my Aunt Sophia could be as bad as Aunt Farah. And even if she wasn't, I wasn't so sure I wanted to turn myself over to anyone else who could claim a right to my life. And I'd never see Jin again. My eyes were latched to Jin's back up ahead when I realized that the front of the caravan train had come to a stop.
What's happening?
Yasmin put her hand on Fahim's head, keeping him from going any farther. A mutter ran back through the caravan train as folks raised their heads, straining to see up front, shielding their eyes against the dying sunset. They wanted to see, but a caravan ran on orders. Except for me. I broke into a run for the front of the caravan, which had reached the top of a dune. Parviz was standing above me, Jin next to him, his shima pulled down. As I climbed my way up the sand, the camels had dropped to their knees to rest, not understanding why we were stopping. I broke over the top of the high dune next to them. At first, I couldn't grasp it either. Where Dasama ought to have been, we were standing over ruins. Old, half-crumbled walls caught the setting sun, the last light casting shadows across them and stretching out across the sand. Then I realized they weren't shadows. My mouth went dry. How? Jin said very carefully as I stepped up beside him. Does sand burn? The closer we got, the worse it looked. Where the stone was blackened, it had crumbled to ash. In places, the sand itself was black or burned hard. We didn't speak as we drifted through what was left of the narrow streets and charred houses. This wasn't a fire. Fire was something that some folks survived, that you ran from and put out, smothered in sand. Jin was the first to say what we were both thinking, too low for the rest of the caravan to hear. No bodies. Bodies burn easier than stone. I kicked a rock, and what was left of it disintegrated. No fire would catch like this unless the whole place was soaked in oil.
A bomb, Jin said.
It wasn't a question, but that didn't mean he was right.
The pattern for it is wrong, I said.
Jin looked at me sideways. How do you know that?
Come on, Si Qian boy.
I forced lightness.
The wind dragging at my shima tasted like ash and made me want to gag.
You telling me you never set off gunpowder when you were a kid, just to blow things up?
Jin snorted. We didn't all grow up near a weapons factory.
I shrugged.
When a bomb goes off, it's always got a center. Here, the buildings are burned on every side.
Like something had crashed down from above and flooded the city with fire.
Familiarity whispered in my ear, though I didn't know why. I rounded a ruined corner and pulled up short.
And a bomb doesn't spare prayer houses either.
In the middle of the destruction, a huge domed building was the only thing left whole in the city. Its walls were still a fresh, gleaming white, the scorch marks stopping just short of it.
What did this?
I whispered. Jin just shook his head. Something unnatural.
We've got another problem.
We'd wandered to the center of the town, and I nodded to the crumbled hunk of melted metal and stone in the middle of the square.
I'm thinking that used to be the well.
The fear that went through the caravan as they saw the same thing I had was unmistakable. No one knew the value of water like desert folks.
How much water do we have left?
Jin asked, raising his voice as he called to Parviz.
A day's worth.
Parviz looked grim.
Two if we ration. It's a 6-day walk to Saramotai.
I recognized the name of the next oasis town we were due at after stopping to resupply in Dasama.
It's only 2 days to Fahali, though,
Jin said,
if we head west instead of north. That's off our path,
Parviz replied too quickly.
Better to die of thirst than to take a detour, is it?
Jin's arms were crossed over his chest. His eyes were on his feet, but also far away, like he had bigger things on his mind than us all dying of thirst.
Besides, I'm not hearing any other bright ideas.
Parviz glanced at his brother, a man named Tal Oman.
They called him that to set him apart from the other three Omans in the caravan. Something silent passed between the two men. Tal Oman shook his head slightly. I glanced at Jin to see if he'd caught it too, but he was lost in his own thoughts.
Is there something we ought to know?
I asked.
About Fahali?
It's a dangerous city,
Parviz said shortly.
It's a dangerous desert, I said.
He was hiding something, but I couldn't tell what.
Isn't that why you pay us?
There was a moment of tense silence. Then Parviz nodded, his face pulled tight.
Fahali, then. And we pray your aim is sharp, young Ali Dad.
Chapter 14.
I could see the mountains from Fahali, like ragged teeth in the afternoon haze. Amanpour was across those mountains, on the other side of the Devs Valley. And the border meant soldiers. We were stopped at the gates by the city guard, bored-looking Mirajin men in pale yellow, who flipped through our saddlebags lazily, chatting to Parviz as they did. Most of the caravan sank down to sit in the sand, leaning just inside the city walls while the bags were searched. We'd walked with barely any rest since Tasama, only stopping in the darkest hours of the night, when continuing might as well mean death by ghoul instead of by thirst. I remembered what Jin had said our first night in the desert. The desert didn't let weakness live. And we were still alive. We were Mirajin, and we survived. Even as my legs gave out below me, I'd never been prouder to be a desert girl among the camel's knees. A coin danced across Yasmin's knuckles absently, catching the sunlight. Worry danced across her face quicker than the sunlight off the coin and vanished just as fast. Her palm tightened around the half-losey piece. Parviz's eyes veered away once too often as the guard rummaged through his belongings, his back too stiff. My hand drifted to my gun without really being sure what I was afraid of. I looked around for Jin. I spotted him a good 20 paces away, pulling his hat low as he headed away from the caravan. My tiredness and my stiff legs forgotten, I pulled myself to my feet and dashed to catch up to him. "Hey!" I shoved him in the shoulder, closing the distance a moment before he would have disappeared around a corner. In one movement, his hand was on my wrist, halfway to reaching for his gun before he realized it was me. He was jumpier than a barefoot beggar on hot sand.
"You ought to know better than to sneak up on a man like that, bandit."
He dropped my arm, trying for lightness. I didn't rise to the bait. "And you ought to know better than to think you can sneak away from me." We were far enough from the camel's knees not to be overheard, but I kept my voice low all the same. "You're hiding something." Jin laughed, though not like it was actually funny. Like he didn't even know where to start. When he pushed his hand through his hair, his shima fell back. I was seeing him unobstructed in the light of day for the first time in weeks.
"There are a lot of things you don't know, Amani."
That was probably true. Jin didn't tell me much. There were just the moments when the walls he kept around himself cracked, and I saw a hint of something through them. When he slipped and mentioned a brother or a dead mother, but he closed those up fast enough. "So what don't I know about Tasama?" The memory of the scorched sand hung between us uneasily, ending any attempt at a joke he might have tried to make. We'd both seen a whole city gone up in flames, and he'd barely said a handful of words to me since then, like he was avoiding me.
"Amani."
He reached for me, his hand dropping away just in time to hide a gesture that didn't seem to belong to a brother in view of the caravan. I glanced behind me. They were still being searched at the gate. Colorful scarves unraveled in one of the guard's arms, making Isra scold him as she snatched them back off the ground.
"You don't have to carry on through the desert from here if you don't want to."
My full attention came back to Jin. That wasn't what I'd been expecting. He was watching me close, gauging my reaction. "How do you reckon?" I asked warily.
"There's a train. It runs from an outpost a few hours' walk outside Fahali. It goes straight to Isman. You could be drinking arak in the shade of the palace walls in fewer days than I have fingers, if you wanted."
A train. Like the one he'd pulled me off all those weeks ago on the other side of the desert. A straight shot to the capital, after 16 years of aiming for it, and he was offering it to me. And I'd never see Jin again. That was what he was really offering me, a way out of this. To turn my back on Tasama and what he knew, and walk away to the life I'd always wanted, or always figured I did. And if that's not what I want? I had traitor eyes, and there was no way he could mistake my meaning. He took a deep breath, I couldn't tell whether it was relief or resignation. When he inhaled, I could see the Sichuan sun over his heart rise just above the horizon of his shirt collar.
I told you in Sazi that the Sultan was building weapons for the Galen. But it wasn't just guns.
What do you mean?
The factory outside of Dustwalk had made nothing but guns my whole life. Jin's jaw worked like he was testing the words.
I'd watched him cross paths with death and dodge it with a wry tilt of the hat a half dozen times now. This was something different. This was something more than just him in trouble.
There were rumors of another weapon,
he said finally.
Something they were making far down in the south. A bomb that could level whole cities like the hand of God itself. Whole countries, even.
Whole countries like his. He told me other things about the Galen, that they were building an empire at the borders of countries around them as their magic faded. A weapon like the one that had destroyed Dasama would let them swallow other countries whole.
We thought it might just be something being spread to scare folks,
Jin went on.
But in the end, better safe than dead.
He let out a long exhale, but my own breathing was feeling shallow.
So I was sent down to the end of civilization to see what I could find. And lo and behold, there's a monster of a weapons factory. I figured even if there was no great leveler of civilizations, this was something. Something that might be able to cripple the Galen for a little while, stem their supply of guns to their armies overseas. When I blew it up, I thought any great weapon that could slaughter cities would go up with it. Judging by the burnt oasis, Naguib got it out first. If the Sultans made a weapon like this for the Galen, they won't need a single bullet to bring the whole world to its knees.
I thought I understood fear. I'd grown up in Dustwalk, but that was a restless fear, the kind that made me want to run. This was the kind that crawled up from the bottom of your gut and told you there was no running. The kind that made you go still from it. And Dasama was...
a testing ground,
he filled in grimly.
Commander Naguib must have taken the weapon up to Isman to hand it over. But they would have needed a testing site. Some place where the Galen would be able to see it for themselves.
And the Sultan had given them one of his own cities, with his own people, so they could test a bomb that would cripple the rest of the world.
Dasama was a large Galen base, but rumor had it they were losing control of the city to the rebellion.
I remembered the night we'd met in Deadshot. A new dawn, a new desert. The rebellion. The Sultan was allied with the Galen. Holding his power depended on them. I never figured that the rebel prince might mean getting rid of the Galen as well as the Sultan. I suppose the Galen had. And you think the weapon is here? I said. In Fahali?
This is the only city within spitting distance of Dasama,
Jin said.
Rumor has it the Galen have doubled their numbers here in past months, searching for the rebel prince.
He smiled, like at a private joke.
It'd be petty to yell at him about this. About not telling me, about turning around and walking away from the caravan without a word.
You're going to get us both killed if you go off looking for it on your own, you know. And if I was going to die on account of you, I'd rather have done it weeks ago before I had to do all this walking.
So maybe I was a little petty. Amani, you are not a part of this if I...
Jin stopped abruptly. My eyes followed his behind me. I saw a flash of blue uniforms. It was all I needed to see. Jin grabbed my hand as I moved to run, pulling me sideways instead,
into a narrow side alley. The cool of the shade folded over me, and we both flattened ourselves in the shadows as the Galen soldiers descended on the camel's knees.
"All caravans must submit to inspection."
The Galen soldier spoke Mirajan with a thick accent that came from the back of his throat and made it sound like he was gargling water while talking.
"We've already searched them."
One of the Mirajan guards stepped forward.
"They have nothing. We were about to release them, sir."
"We are to search again. Orders of General Dumas."
The Galen soldier waved his men forward, even as the caravan drew back. The city guard had moved through the caravan's bags like a lazy desert heat, but the Galen soldiers tore through like a storm, only with more ill will. I stared as bags were ripped off of camel's sides, what was left of our supplies emptied into the street. Yasmin was forced to raise her hands above her head while the Galen soldiers searched her slowly. Then there was a shout. A young Galen held up what was left of one of the saddlebags. He'd sliced into it with a knife, peeling the layers of leather apart, and he was holding what looked like a thin silk bag. He tipped it sideways and something fell out, scattering in the afternoon wind. It looked like fine blue thread, almost like hair. Jin swore.
"What is it?"
I asked.
"Medicines,"
Jin said.
"Only ones made from magic, not science."
That couldn't be right. There were plenty of desperate charlatans across the desert who sold red water and claimed it was cure-all genie blood, but nobody believed in that. But then they didn't hide it in the linings of their saddlebags either.
"Magic will cost anyone his head,"
Jin said grimly.
"Figures that Parviz wanted to avoid the city."
I watched as Parviz was dragged forward and then shoved to his knees in front of the soldier who'd spoken Mirajin. My hand flew to my gun at the same moment that the Galen soldier pulled out his. My anger was sudden. They didn't belong in our desert. They didn't belong in my bloodline, either. I was a desert girl. I hated that half of me came from these foreigners. I could shoot him. The thought slid into my mind as neatly as a bullet slotted into a gun. It might not save Parviz, but I could try. Before I could move, Yasmin burst forward, shoving her way past the Mirajan guard. She flung herself between her father and the soldier, straight into the line of my shot. The soldier's gun didn't drop. It just stayed trained on Yasmin now instead of Parviz. His finger went to the trigger. Mine was already there.
"Stop."
The Mirajan guard stepped forward.
"You will not shoot him here."
"It is law that he be executed,"
the Galen soldier said.
"General Dumas's orders."
He said the name again, as if it carried the weight of God's own command.
"It's law for smugglers to stand trial before execution,"
the Mirajan guard countered.
"Prince Naguib's orders."
I felt Jin stiffen behind me at the name the same time as I did. Naguib was here. Commander Naguib, who had held a gun to my head and shot Tamid through the knee. Of all the people to save them. The pistol was reholstered. I sagged back against the cool wall as the caravan was rounded up to be imprisoned. Jin and I stayed still in the mouth of the alley. When we couldn't hear footsteps anymore, his body relaxed against mine.
"You know, I never believed in fate until I met you,"
he said, tipping his head back against the wall with a deep sigh.
"Then I started thinking coincidence didn't have near so cruel a sense of humor."
"You're a real charmer. Anyone ever tell you that?"
"They have, actually. but usually they say it without rolling their eyes.
We leaned back in silence. A line of laundry drifted lazily above us in the afternoon heat as I took stock of the situation. We were stuck in a city with the Galen, their great destroyer of cities, and Nagib. And now the caravan was gone. "We need to get out of here," I said.
"And what about everyone else, Bandit?"
Every time he called me that, it made something inside me pull toward him that I couldn't quite shake.
"Planning to leave them all behind?"
"I wasn't planning on leaving you behind." "I'm not planning anything," I said instead. "I haven't thought that far ahead." But now that I did think about it, Jin was right. I knew what most of the camel's knees would do if they were me. This was the desert. You took care of yourself and your own. The rest got left in the sand to die. Like Tamid.
"There's a train straight to Isman tomorrow," Jin said. "That's about as far ahead as you need to think."
"So come with me."
The words were out too quick.
"You're not going to find the bomb here without getting yourself killed. You've got to know that. And if we stay much longer, both of us are going to wind up dead."
Something between us seemed to still.
I watched the slow rise and fall of his shoulders as he took a deep breath, then a second one, a third.
"All right."
"All right?" I'd been ready to argue and drag him out of here, but all the fight had gone out of him with those two words. "That's it? You're not going to smart-talk your way around me?"
"All right," Jin repeated. He spread his hands wide like he was surrendering, though the grim set of his mouth made it seem like he'd rather do anything but. "You're right. So what do you suggest we do?"
I was feeling bolder than I ever had. "We could just keep running, Jin. If we had to."
"You mean if I wanted to?"
His eyes searched mine, and for one second they looked as dark and focused as they had in the few moments after he'd kissed me on the train. My eyes were probably as wild as that second, too. The last time we'd really stood this close, on the edge of living or dying, of wanting and needing.
"Tell me we couldn't do it."
Jin interrupted my thoughts.
"Tell me that the two of us together, we couldn't get every one of the camel's knees out of the city alive if we really tried. Hell, tell me you couldn't do it on your own if you set your stubborn head to it."
A small smile was creeping back.
"Tell me that, and we'll walk away. Right now. Go and save ourselves and leave them to die. All you've got to do is say the word. Tell me that that's how you want your story to go, and we'll write it straight across the sand to the sea. Just say it."
My story. I'd spent my life dreaming of my own story that could start when I finally reached Isman, a story written in far-off places I didn't know how to dream about yet. And on my way there, I'd slough off the desert until there was nothing left of it to mark the pages. Only Jin was right. I was a desert girl. Even in Isman, I would still be the same blue-eyed bandit with a hanged mother who left her friend dying. He didn't need me to answer, not really. I gave myself away too easily. Or maybe he just knew me too well.
"Any ideas, Bandit?"
And that easily we were a team again. I tilted my head back. Between two windows, laundry drifted lazily in the hot desert wind. "Some." I was dressed as a girl for the first time since I'd left Dustwalk. The plain blue culotte we'd stolen off a clothesline was too tight around my arms with my boy's clothes on underneath.
I'd almost forgotten you were a girl under there.
Jin looked me over, hands hooked above his head. He still looked rumpled from sleep. Exhaustion had gotten the better of us while we waited for the cover of dark, and we'd both fallen asleep slumped inside an alleyway narrow enough to hide us. I'd woken with a stiff spine, and Jin's arms slung across me like he was trying to keep me from running out on him in his sleep again. But there was no chance of that. I was done leaving people behind.
"Did you want to be the girl?"
I asked, readjusting the red shima I'd wrapped around my waist like a sash.
"You make a prettier girl than I do."
He winked at me, and I rolled my eyes at him. The plan was simple. I was going to walk into the city barracks and walk back out with information on where the prison was. The city barracks housed the Mirajin guard most of the time, but it seemed like half of them were camping in tents while the Galen army housed their soldiers. Once we knew where they were, we'd be able to work on getting the camel's knees out. If anyone questioned me, I was to say I was there to get water, just like the stream of women going in and out all day. As it turned out, rumors were running freer than the pumps in Fahali. The camel's knees weren't the only caravan to turn up lips cracked and gasping out news of Dasama. The city's supplies were stretched thin under the weight of the extra people, caravan and soldiers alike. Water was being rationed, and half the wells and pumps were closed, but not the one in the barracks.
"I'll be nearby if you get in trouble. Just stay in sight."
He nodded above at a rooftop with a decent overview of the barracks, decent enough that a good shot might be able to hit a soldier on the inside. I was the better shot, but he was right. I also made the better girl, which meant I was counting on Jin to cover me. It was a short walk to the army barracks, but the streets were busy in the cool just before dusk. I kept my eyes low as I fought my way through the crowds in the last of the setting sun. I'd near forgotten what it felt like to be a girl in Miraji. I was inconspicuous, but not the way I'd been as a boy. Not because I was the same as everyone else, because I didn't matter. Nobody in Miraji had ever thought enough of a girl to imagine I might be a spy. The barracks were four long, low buildings painted in white around a dusty square. Besides the prison, there'd be sleeping quarters, kitchens, storage, and the stables. That's what Jin had told me, at least. All I had to do was figure out which one was the prison and get back out. I tried to look like I was keeping my eyes on my feet as I walked through the dusty yard. There were soldiers practicing with guns and various targets. One of the Galen soldiers had a gun with a sharp end like I'd never seen before. He fired at a cloth figure of a man before ramming forward, driving the sharp tip through the dummy's stomach. In the middle of the square was the water pump, with three Galen soldiers stationed at it, taking coin from anyone who wanted to use it. A line of women holding pails on their hips snaked out from the pump. They all kept their eyes low, like they were trying not to be noticed by all the armed men around them. I didn't have a bucket. I just had to hope nobody noticed, or there'd be more questions than I was fit to answer. The girl at the front of the line was about my age, and dressed in a dusty pink culotte. A small child was hanging off the hem, sucking her fist. The girl in pink's hands were empty of coin, but she was begging, her eyes red from crying. I heard a sliver of her conversation as I passed. Her family, they were thirsty, she was saying. Thirsty and poor. She couldn't pay the new tax on water, but she was begging for their pity. Soldier's eyes swept her with the same look the parched women were giving the water pump. Two Galen soldiers leaned in and said something to each other in their ugly foreign language.
Then one of them, with pale eyes like mine and unnaturally yellow hair, gestured to the girl to follow him. The girl knelt down and pried the child from her calotte, handing her the bucket. I was too far away now, but I guessed she was telling the little girl to stay put. The little girl took a staggering step to follow all the same, but one of the other women in line grabbed her, holding her back. Even holding the child, she spat at the girl in pink. "Foreigner's whore," she called, loud enough for me to hear. The girl in pink shrank away. I thought of my mother. Anger spurred me toward them before I could think better of it. I didn't have a plan. I didn't even have a weapon, but I'd figure that out on the way. I was 5 steps behind them when 2 figures I recognized emerged from a doorway, making me stop short. Commander Naguib was wearing a golden Mirajin uniform with 2x as many buttons as when I'd seen him in Dustwalk the first time. He looked like he was trying to stand straight enough to make it fit him right. The Galen next to him, on the other hand, seemed like he was born in his uniform. He was old enough to have been Naguib's father, and a head taller. Red tassels hung off his uniform, but instead of making him look like a cushion, they reminded me of scars. The soldier dropped the crying girl's arm and snapped into a salute of his commanding officer. "General Dumas, sir." So this was the Galen general, the one whose name they spoke like it carried the weight of the law, who'd moved 1/2 an army here to hunt the rebel prince, who'd had a whole desert town raised as a testing site for a weapon to conquer the world. I might be inconspicuous as a woman, but Naguib was bound to recognize me. I turned away quickly, eyes searching for an escape. There was a doorway to my right. Holy words were etched into the wood in a deep scrawl. That could only mean one thing. A prayer house. The Galen did not worship the same god. Jin had told me that. The door came open under my hand, and I plunged through blindly, slamming the door behind me. The sound of praying greeted me, mingled with sobbing. The last of the day's light was trickling in between the lattice of the windows. It was uneven where the wood had rotted away. Where the light hit the floor, I could see that the tiles had been smashed to dust. As my eyes adjusted to the dark, I realized the praying was coming from a girl, sprawled on her knees, her hands shackled to the wall. Her face was pressed to the ground, hidden behind matted hair that looked almost red-tinted in the dying sunlight, like dye or blood. Something else shifted in the gloom, and then a golden army uniform stepped into the light. I pulled back toward the door, but it was too late. He'd seen me. "Here to pray?" the soldier asked, a tinge of sarcasm in his voice. Something rattled on his wrists. More chains. This wasn't a prayer house after all. Not anymore, at least. It was part of the prison. "We don't have a Holy Father, but you're welcome to join us all the same." For one stupid moment, I could have sworn the words came from Tamid. I stumbled back to 100 dusty days kneeling side by side with Tamid, saying holy words. Then I found my footing in the present, where Tamid was dead. It was just the accent, I realized. It was tainted with something that sounded like the last county. But there was something else familiar about it, something that wasn't quite Dustwalk, but that I knew all the same. Finally, his face caught the light with its unnaturally pale eyes, and the memory came fully forward. "I know you," I said. "From the other side of the desert, in my uncle's shop, when Jin hid below the counter and Commander Naguib stepped inside. This desert is full of sin.
the smart-talking, scrawny kid with eyes like mine who'd flanked his commander.
And I know you. He frowned as he dropped his hands, the manacles rattling over the sound of the girls praying. His sallow face twisted in thought before he hit on it.
You're the girl from the shop. So is this where smart-talking your commander lands you? I asked. I couldn't help myself.
No.
His accent seemed to get thicker from talking to me, and I heard my own dropping back into the last county lilt.
I'm just special.
You've got a mighty fine opinion of yourself. The girl's praying got louder. And what about her?
She's special, too, the soldier said.
I supposed they must have made Commander Nagib angrier than most to warrant being locked away here instead of with the rest of the criminals. And where would you two be if you weren't special? I asked. The young soldier looked straight through me.
You wouldn't be trying to find the prison now, would you?
I ran my tongue over my dry lips nervously. I shouldn't trust him. He was a soldier. But he was a prisoner, too. And that ought to mean we were on the same side, or at least that we had the same enemy. If I helped you get out of here, would you tell me where it is? I touched the manacles on his hands. His wrists felt feverish. I promised Jin I wouldn't do anything stupid, but if we were getting the caravan out, we might as well get everyone else out, too. Jin could pick a lock. He'd told me that in the desert. One of those times he'd started to talk about something he'd learned along with his brother before cutting himself off.
And where would I go? He asked.
I don't know, I admitted. We were both an awfully long way from home. Wherever you wanted.
A gunshot from outside made me jump.
Then everything went quiet again.
Everything but the girls praying. Amani. My name in the young soldier's mouth caught me off guard. That's you. Isn't it?
How do you know that?
Your cousin talked about you a whole lot. The pretty one with the dark hair.
Shira, selling me out on the train. Who they must have brought along to find me, and through me, Jin. What happened to her? I asked. She'd tried to get me killed. I shouldn't care. Is she alive?
She wasn't as useful as she made herself out to be to the commander, though maybe it was more that you weren't where you ought to be. She got left with the Sultan in Isman.
The Sultan had once beaten a woman he'd loved to death. What had happened to a girl who meant nothing to anyone in Isman?
I'm Noorsham, he said, since you didn't ask and all.
And what would happen to this poor, scrawny kid from the end of the desert with too smart a mouth to be a soldier? Voices came from the other side of the door. The girl's praying doubled. I stood up sharply.
You ought to hide, Noorsham said. His blue eyes locked on mine seriously.
Heart pounding, I rushed away from the lamplight. There was no light at the back of the huge prayer house turned prison. I pressed myself into the shadows just as the door opened. Nagib and General Dumas entered. Jin had said he didn't believe in fate until he met me, and I was starting to think he was right. The only thing between me and getting caught was a thin veil of darkness, and Noorsham not selling me out. But Nagib and General Dumas paid no mind to Norsham. They stopped in front of the praying girl instead.
Is this her?
General Dumas's Mirajin was cleaner than the soldiers who'd arrested the camel's knees, like it had been worn smooth by years of practice.